Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was the previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I gotta tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we gotta do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment.
AppSats. I want you to know that AppSats is the world premier on helping partners who have been traumatized get back to health. And we do that a number of ways, but what I promise you is that if you seek out an AppSats coach or clinician, you will be getting the best of the best. We understand the trauma you've been through, and we know the ways to begin to make that feel safer. And for anybody out there that's considering AppSats and doing a certification with us, we have one starting tomorrow, as well as we have a face-to-face training in November. And we offer at least two. This year it was 3 trainings virtually through Zoom, which is a HIPAA-compliant Skype. It's an amazing way to hang out in your own hometown, not have to get any lodging, and learn the skills you need to be able to begin to work with partners, either from a coaching standpoint or from a clinical standpoint. Now, there's another opportunity I wanted to talk about. I've got a friend, a colleague, who is starting a 4-week topic group on how to deal with triggers. He's going to provide 90-minute educational webinars, and then the 4-week group will help partners apply their learning from this webinar into their normal lives, helping them identify what the triggers are, preparing for unavoidable triggers, and effectively managing their response to triggers. So this is a great opportunity. If you don't feel like your triggers are getting any better, again, you attend this webinar that's about 90 minutes, and then you have 4 weeks in a group to talk about how you're managing your triggers, what you've learned, and what you might tweak to make trigger busters even more effective. If you want more information, you can contact CAT, C-A-T, at visibleministries.com. That, again, is visibleministries.com. Groups are Wednesdays at 7 p.m. UK time or 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you know, Kat is an amazing coach, and she heads up this recovery process. And 4 weeks of focus support plus a 90-minute webinar. Very, very affordable. I'm not exactly sure how much. She says the whole thing, including the webinar, costs around $63. Now, I don't think I'm supposed to talk about price, so shame on me. You didn't hear that. I forgot. I'm not supposed to talk about price on the air, but I just did. So we are always giving you information that you can then take back into your own life and decide how you can apply it. You can't say always, but I will say most of the time. And if anybody missed the show last week, you know that Jen Cole, Coach Jen, interviewed me, and I had so many well-wishers contact me and tell me they were praying for my brother, who's got 2, if not 3 types of cancer. We won't actually know. His oncologist is on vacation until July 12th. That's when my brother has his first appointment. So I'm going to stay positive. I was pretty down last week about that. But I am going to stay positive. And I have said this before, but one of the things that I believe is that true resiliency is accepting whatever has happened in your life and asking yourself, you know, how can I grow from it? What do I need to learn? How can I be the poster child for it? And so, not that anybody wants to be the poster child for being a partner. It's not the group you signed up for. But at the same time, you do have a responsibility to do the kind of nurturing things to counterbalance the stress and the trauma this kind of thing is put on you. So ask yourself, am I doing enough for my own intentional self-care and for my own need to nurture myself? And if you're sitting there shaking your head no, then I want you to promise me that you will identify ways that you can take better care of yourself. It's very important. Now, I'm pretty excited about today's show because I have this recovery couple coming on. And, you know, the title of this show is A Recovering Couple Helps Couples in Recovery with Carol the Coach. And when I read that, I thought, oh, you better change that because you got a lot of words that are couples and recovery. But I kind of liked it. I like it when somebody has gone through recovery themselves, has gotten to the other side, and then makes it their mission to help other couples do the same. So I am excited to be interviewing Matthew and Joanna Rapsmith, who work together helping couples and individuals find healing and transformation. And, you know, they know what it was like to go through the devastation of partner and sexual betrayal in their own marriage. And they have come out on the other side. They have restored their marriage. And I never want to sound like a broken record, but if you remember, at APSATS, we use this model that says when you first are in discovery, it's our job to help you to be as safe as possible because your whole world is traumatized. And then it's our job to help you grieve and mourn the losses, the illusions, the marriage, the family life, whatever you need to grieve. And then that third phase is then restoration of yourself and of the family, perhaps the coupleship, maybe not. But obviously Matthew and Joanna have made it their mission to really help couples navigate through this trauma. So they're going to be talking about their own lives and also about how they do that with couples. Can't wait for that to happen. Now, I was talking with a woman the other day, and she wants a disclosure, and he doesn't. And he literally is saying, I'm not doing it. It'll send me back into shame, and it'll trigger you too. And then you'll no longer be in as much recovery as you've been in before. And this woman really was very, very traumatized and through a lot of hard work, she decided that she needed a therapeutic separation, and then she decided that she needed some more space, and now he's back in the home. So you can imagine he is scared to death. He's scared that that this disclosure is going to rock her world again and probably she'll want out of the relationship. Now, we both think that he also has some secrets that he hasn't shared with her. And so that's the other part that he is really avoiding dealing with this very important process. She's like, what can I do to make him do the disclosure? And what I know to be true is there's not anything a woman can do to make their husband go through a process that he won't do. But I absolutely believe if somebody's in good recovery, there's a willingness to help her heal. And that oftentimes requires that disclosure. She wants the truth. And so, if you've ever been in that situation where you couldn't get him to acquiesce, you couldn't get him to face his fears head on, you know, maybe it was really about how does he trust the process? Especially if there is secrets. Well, then, one of the things that I think she has to do and other women have to do is to say, you know, I deserve to know the truth, and I can't guarantee how I will get through this, but I promise you that I won't do anything radically different for maybe 90 days. You know, some counselors and coaches say, you have to promise not to leave for a year. And I would never make a partner promise that because there might be something in the disclosure that was so horrific she can't stay with him. But my experience is that I don't know of anybody who has left as a result of a disclosure. And we've all heard some pretty horrific things. I mean, molestation of the kids, men being with other men, the volumes of women that men have been with. When they're really trying to be open and honest and spill their guts, that is very appealing. I won't say attractive, but I will say that is what the partner wants to see, somebody who's willing to be 100% open, because we all know that if he's open and is willing to share that kind of truth, he obviously is working a recovery program that absolutely requires honesty and transparency and authenticity. So she said, Carol, what can I do to make him do a disclosure? And I said, there is nothing you can do other than continue to share your feelings and continue to tell him that you will really appreciate him taking the risk of sharing the horrendous things that he's done. You see, he told her he had already shared everything. And so we know that that's probably not true. Women are pretty intuitive. Now, if you are a male partner and you're listening to this show, I don't mean to categorize all sex addicts as men. We know that there are women that are sex addicts too. And you struggle with the same things that female partners struggle with. So I don't mean to be selling you short. It's just right now, we still see way more female partners than male partners. We know part of that is that they're not as prone to getting help. And, wow, what I know to be true is that a sex addict absolutely has to get a committee together, a variety of help to stay in recovery. And partners need that, too, to decrease the trauma of partner betrayal. So, good question about the disclosure. And if you have a question, you can always email me at carol@carolthecoach.com, and I will make sure to read your question on the air. Now, as I said, I'm real excited to be talking to this couple because they have lived this issue and they've made it and they've transformed their lives, and now they're working that 12-step. They are helping other people process this issue too. So I want to welcome Matthew and Joanna to the show. How are you both today?
Hi, we are good and so glad to be here.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be with you.
Well, thank you. I mean, your story is tremendous. Can you share with our listening audience a little bit about your journey as a couple?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have been together about 9.5 years now, almost 10 years. We met in Memphis, Tennessee, and shortly after getting married, decided we wanted to move to California and go to grad school together. And so moved out here about 8 months into marriage.
Yeah, and I think when early on in our relationship and in our marriage, we really had a heart to work with couples, to work with marriages, and wasn't exactly sure what that was going to look like. But really pursued kind of our dream to come out to California and went through grad school together, got a degree. And in that process, we found some really amazing tools that helped our marriage, helped our relationship, and really strengthened the kind of bond that we had. But we found ourselves kind of hitting our head against a wall and really feeling kind of stuck. And about 3 years into our marriage, We had decided for Joanna to go and get a second master's in marriage and family therapy to become a therapist. And right before that program started, I came clean about my lifelong struggle with sex addiction and pornography addiction. Mm-hmm. And right before that program started, and that really just completely changed the trajectory of our life and our work.
Yeah, we did not plan to get into this work specifically, but after, you know, diving in headfirst into recovery and kind of doing that full time, it felt like, for several years, realizing that the impact it had on us, that's something that we really wanted to bring into our work and help other people with. And I think especially as we went through the process, you know, we found a lot of resources for Matthew, a few resources for me, and almost nothing as a couple. And we just had such a heart, such a passion to see relationships and marriages actually survive this, that we really wanted to pour into that area in the field.
Yeah.
Well, I get that. And, you know, anything that I would ask you that you don't feel comfortable answering, feel free to just say that you will pass. But, you know, here it was right before you guys were going to start school. And was it a discovery that occurred, Matthew? Did she discover that you were acting out sexually?
So it was actually, I started the MFT program. One of my first classes was a 2-week intensive called Shame and Guilt. And so a real pick-me-up class there. And part of the class, they actually had a pastor come in who gave his testimony of struggling with sex addiction and his kind of recovery. And as he was sharing, I don't know, there's just something in the back of my mind saying, you know, this clicks. Like this something about what he's sharing resonating with you. So I was like, I think I need to go home and ask Matthew if this is something he's struggling with. So that day I went home, I told him about the man who had shared in our class, and
So she told me the story. It was August 1st, 2013. She told me the story. And I don't know why, because up until that point, when we had talked about this issue, I had always kind of, I'd lied or I had kind of shifted and said, well, that was something I struggled with in the past, but I don't struggle with that anymore. And that was not the truth. And so for some reason that day, when she said, is this something you're struggling with? Out of my mouth came the words, yes, I am. And I'm so thankful for those words, because it's what really launched our recovery journey and the transformation of our relationship. Yeah. And so that began a long healing process for us.
Yeah. And I think in a lot of ways, I finally felt confident in asking him that, because I'd heard a story of hope, of healing. You know, he had actually named and listed the resources that had helped, and I wrote them all down, and I basically handed the list to Matthew when he said that, and it was a little bit of a whirlwind. It was definitely interesting starting the MFT program as we were also starting recovery as a couple. Wouldn't necessarily recommend doing it that way, but yeah.
Well, exactly. For our listening audience, MFT program is a marriage and family therapy program, so here you two were getting ready to learn some of the most important work of your life, and then you were in crisis, and you ended up, I was talking earlier about having enough resiliency to get through the crisis, learn the skills that you needed, and then make a difference in the lives of couples. And I know that you believe in the intimacy pyramid and the importance of that process. Can you share what the intimacy process of the pyramid is?
Yeah, I think kind of as Joanna mentioned, when we got into recovery, we just really felt like there were so many resources, and the resources were really good, especially for the addict. But what we really struggled with was to find really any clear resources or clear path for couples. And so we really had no idea where we were going, what we were doing in recovery, and we kind of felt like we were making it up as we went along. And so what we really became passionate about once we kind of got through our crisis and started looking at what's next was, you know, what do couples need to know early on in the journey in terms of where things are headed, and also what are the components of restoration of the relationship? What are the really important pieces, and how do those pieces fit together? And I think what we had realized is that we had a really great relationship before discovery. We had a really great marriage, but a lot of our intimacy, a lot of our vulnerability wasn't built on a secure foundation. And the things that I had been hiding, the ways in which I had manipulated our relationship to keep my secrets hidden, had really kind of torn apart the intimacy, the vulnerability, the work that we had done to build our relationship. And so our relationship felt hollow, even though it felt really good. And we really were passionate that if we were going to rebuild, if we were going to do this again, we had to do it the right way. And so the intimacy pyramid is something that we have been developing with another therapist, Dan Drake, who does a lot of work in this field, and with the idea of really wanting to give couples a roadmap, an ingredient list of what's ahead and what's really necessary to find that new level of hope and healing.
Yeah, and so if you imagine, you know, the pyramid, almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs pyramid, right? On the bottom level, you start with honesty, and especially, you know, as a recovery couple, we realize the deep need for honesty to be the foundation of that relationship, and then building on that kind of safety, trust, vulnerability, and intimacy. And I think what we love about it is that, you know, you have the right kind of starting steps of honesty and safety, but you also know what goal you're working towards. You know, there's a lot of hope saying, like, we can find healthy intimacy again. This isn't just, you know, a crisis that we can get through and survive, but it's really a relationship we expect to thrive in. And so I think that was really exciting for us.
Yeah, and one of my experiences was being a part of 12-step community. I came I came across a lot of really amazing, you know, men and women who had years of sobriety, who had really built a really strong program, but whose relationships, whose marriages were really stuck and were really in a pretty toxic place years after discovery, years after, you know, like I said, with all the sobriety built. And so we really kind of felt this call to say, you know, we want to give a path for couples where addicts are working in that place of sobriety and finding freedom, but something that offers freedom both for the addict, for the partner, and for the couple. And that's really why we put this together.
And I want to get the foundation again. And I also want to give a heads up to Dan Drake, because he and Janice are going to be on our show next week talking about disclosures, because, of course, they wrote the book, Full Disclosures, and that is so important. So
absolutely.
I'm glad to see that you're hanging with such important people, people that really have a lot of integrity. But go ahead and give me that foundation again. You said, just like in a pyramid, in the intimacy pyramid, you're looking at characteristics like honesty and trust. And what else did you say?
Yeah, safety.
Yeah, so we really start with honesty. And you know, for us, honesty, you know, is one of the things that, like you said, you've talked about and you're going to be talking about more, and that is disclosure. You know, full disclosure was a part of our early journey. We didn't know how to do, we didn't have Dan at the time.
Yeah. The book hadn't been written yet, so we were.
We were somewhat winging it, but we had been told full disclosure was good, and so we actually.
And we were told therapeutic full disclosure was good. We didn't really know what that meant.
We didn't know what a CSAT was.
Yeah, and so we basically thought, oh, that just meant a therapist was present. So we called up our poor therapist from, like, years before and said, will you sit in the session with us while Matthew reads this document?
And that's what we did, and we survived it, and she survived it, I think, we hope. But we really do believe that, you know, this full disclosure is a place of, is really that kind of grounding place, the place where the cards are on the table, the couple knows what they're dealing with, what exactly they're dealing with. And we have seen so many couples do disclosure, and they talk about how difficult the process is, but how key and integral it is to their healing. And so that's a huge part of that honesty piece from the get-go, but it's also the continual honesty. And so, you know, part of honesty in the intimacy pyramid is doing regular check-ins with each other. You know, a big part of our recovery was me bringing home my chips and demonstrating and talking to Joanna about my sobriety, about the work that I was doing to stay sober, to really find a healthy sobriety and a life of freedom beyond that addiction.
And what's really cool is some of the practices that we started in, you know, these lower levels, you know, the check-in started with being important about honesty, and they continue to be important about that. But we also realized that checking in daily and sharing our feelings, affirmations, our needs, you know, what we're doing for self-care, owning things, that actually started to be so important in our practice of vulnerability and intimacy. And so it's a practice that we want to continue to do for the rest of our marriage now, because it's so life-giving and fruitful.
Yeah. And I think what was so helpful for me was to know that I was practicing these things in my recovery community. So doing things like my first step, you know, sharing what had been my story that I had hidden from everyone for so long, really helped me to also do that in my marriage. And so having a 12-step community. I was a part of an SA group for a number of years and still a part of those 12-step communities, but having that place to be honest in that space so that I could then also be honest in my marriage was really key.
Yeah. And I think one of the most life-changing, relationship-changing things for us was to realize the importance of safety in a relationship and what that actually means. I think we don't really talk about that very much. We talk about, you know, love in relationships, but not what does it mean to be a safe person. And so that work had even begun before recovery. And I think we owe a lot of the success of our recovery journey to the work we had even done before around emotional regulation, in both, you know, kind of taking responsibility for our own feelings, our own actions, and then learning how to regulate that within the relationship.
Yeah. And that was, I think,
well,
that
was huge.
Well,
and I've got a question for you, Matthew. I didn't understand one thing. Now, Are you saying, because the first step, I know partners probably know this, but the first step is telling your story, giving your lead, basically witnessing to your 12-step fellowship your story, your sexual timeline. And so are you saying that you also shared that with your wife?
Well, you know, we did, yeah. I mean, anything that I shared with my community, I shared with her. And what we really believed was is that, you know, that the only way that we would feel like we had knew what we were dealing with, and the only way and I know this from the backside, the only way that I would really feel loved and accepted was for Joanna to know fully who I was. And so I was really lucky enough to experience someone hearing my story and not judging me for that and not kind of ostracizing me, because that is what I believed for so long in my life, that if people knew what I was doing, that they wouldn't want any part of me. And so my recovery community was a place in which I experienced a taste of that, but it was in the full disclosure process for us as a couple in which I think I fully realized how powerful it is for someone to know all of your story and to say, I still choose you. I still choose to be in this relationship. And for me, that was the first time I'd really ever experienced that kind of grace in my life.
Well, and I'm glad you said that. Here is the deal for me, because the disclosure in lots of ways parallels or mimics the story, your first step, because she gets to decide, do I want to know when your brain first was exposed to pornography or to sexual offending or whatever, or do I want to know it from the time that you and I met? And so that's a choice for her, and this is in a disclosure.
Right.
And a lot of people speak very negatively about disclosures. It's like they don't know how it could possibly be beneficial to the addict. Like you said, it kind of freed you up and liberated you and really made you talk about intimacy. She still accepted you after she heard your entire story, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
So I was going to say, the second thing partners typically ask for, and this is not part of the APSATS model, but they say, okay, well, I know you've been working really, really hard on that first lead, and you've been talking to your sponsor about it. Well, I want you to read it to me. And they say, oftentimes, most men say, no, this is something between my fellowship and I don't want to read this to you. And so I was clarifying with you, because I thought you were saying that, you know, you two exchanged that bit of information. But I did want the listening audience to know the pros and cons of that, that, you know, you may get some grief from the fellowship. You know, what are you doing? Our work and reading it to her, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and that was actually part of a struggle for us, because there was conflicting messages, I think, both in the kind of 12-step community and with what we were feeling, what we were hearing from people about restoring relationships. And I think there are times that there is tension between the recovery community and I think marriage recovery. And we just believe there doesn't need to be. There is wisdom, I think, in what the recovery community is offering and cautioning. But I think also being aware that my individual recovery works within my marriage recovery. It doesn't have to work against it, and they don't have to be in conflict of each other. But that's also, it's really important, I think, to know exactly how that works together. And we got really lucky because we didn't have a professional who sat down with us and said, here's the risk, here's the benefit, what kind of information is going to be helpful, how should you write it? Mm-hmm. I think that's why we're so thankful to have people like Dan and Janice who are really helping, you know, both therapists and, you know, partners and addicts to know really well what are the kind of things that you share. Mm-hmm. How do you share it in a way that is healing but is also honest?
And what are the risks and benefits? Because I think we create a story in our mind, you know, how that session will go, how after that session will go, based a lot on probably our pain from either staggered disclosure in the past, things like that. And so really helping clients understand, you know, when you do it in this structured way, the healing that is possible through that process.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. And so what I hear you saying is that it was a big part of your recovery to be able to share everything and do that in a very kind, compassionate, gentle, honest,
yes,
vulnerable, authentic way. And I'm saying to our listening audience that, you know, this is what I say, being partner sensitive. I say, boy, after discovery, that's so traumatic. I really would like to defer to the partner and find out what she wants. Because we know not every partner wants disclosure, let alone every partner wants to know about slips. I mean, I've got partners that will say, don't tell me your slips. Tell your sponsor. I just want to know about your deal-breaking behaviors. Right.
Right.
And so you advocate for anything that's honest and trustworthy and creates intimacy, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
When I think in what you bring up is what we think about when we think about safety, we really do believe that the partner needs to be empowered in a way that they weren't during the addiction, during the acting out. You know, the partner was really disempowered because the addict had all the information, you know. And so part of creating safety is giving that partner power and say over what is shared, how it's shared, and even having say over what the recovery looks like. We really believe that while the recovery is the responsibility of the addict, that the partner has a say in how that goes about, because that affects their marriage and that affects their relationship. And so we don't think that recovery works in isolation or a vacuum, because that person doesn't live in a vacuum. That person doesn't live in isolation. They live in a home. They live in a family. And so being able to do that and to navigate that well is a really big challenge of recovery, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. And it's a constantly, you know, moving and changing thing with, you know, helping the partner learn to identify, you know, if I'm working with a wife, what her needs are in terms of honesty and safety. And those may change. And so being able to check in, you know, some partners say, you know, I don't want disclosure. I let them know, okay, that's fine, but it's always an option. It's always on the table. And maybe a few months later, she says, you know what, I think I'm getting stuck because I don't feel like I know the full truth. Can we revisit that? And so really helping, you know, each individual couple feel that out for themselves, what that process looks like.
Well, and, you know, I'm not even aware if you know that I wrote this book, and it's called Help, Her, Heal. It's an empathy workbook for sex addicts. And that is exactly what I do. I talk about the fact that clearly the power differential has been way off because the addict was holding lies and the partner was thinking she had truth and intimacy and then she found out differently. And so if we can default to the partner getting to make some of those decisions so that she can feel like she has some control again, it's a real powerful thing. Yeah, and when intimacy comes back into the relationship, that power differential ends up becoming much, much, much more equal. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. And that's something, and it's a hard place for addicts to be, you know, and that's a lot of the coaching that I do when I work with the men, is we'll talk about that one down position, and we will talk about rebalancing the equation. And it's always a journey, but it's a really important journey, and it's such an important journey for that healing. And it's amazing when we have addicts who are willing to take that stance that says, I'm willing to give up the power that I was holding and give it over, how really radically those relationships change.
So it's really about the addict then empowering their spouse instead of the spouse feeling like, I have to grab power, I have to take power.
And what our experience has been is that so often the partner, when they talk about what the pain that's been caused of them, it's almost always not the behavior, the particular behaviors that were done. It's the lying. It's the withholding, it's the manipulation that is the most painful for them to kind of have to deal with. And so we talk a lot about saying, you know, in terms of healing your relationship, yes, your behavior has to change, mm-hmm. but specifically around lies, around manipulation, around mm-hmm. gaslighting, you know, some of those really, really destructive relational coping mm-hmm. behaviors.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, because we're in the middle of our interview, but if people are loving what they're hearing, how can they get a hold of you and find out more about you and your program and your projects and your counseling?
Yeah, so they can find us at www.renovatelove.com is our website, and we've got a free gift that's on there. When you go to the website, you can sign up for a free gift mm-hmm. that shows you some really easy tools and some tips in terms of how of navigating conflict for all couples, but especially yeah. for couples in recovery. Mm-hmm. So that's a great way for them to be able to find us and, mm-hmm. and to contact us and to reach out and to see about working with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's excellent. So you're saying our listening audience can go to that website and you have a free gift for them. And so they find it under what tab? I mean, how would they access that?
Yeah, so it's right on the very first page, right in the middle. It says kind of there's like a little button that says free gift. And then it's called From Conflict to Connection. And so it's a PDF download that they can get.
Yeah. And that will link them to a calendar where they can schedule a kind of initial conversation with us to share a little bit about where they are and what they're looking for. And one of our big hearts is whether or not we can help someone directly, we want to help everyone find the best resources, because mm-hmm. I think that was such a key for us, was that we found resources that helped our marriage heal.
Yeah.
And so that's really passionate for us, is mm-hmm. that even, you know, not necessarily to work with everyone, but to find everyone someone to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And so I'm wondering, do you have to do face-to-face, or can you also do it via Zoom or Skype?
Yeah, we can do Zoom or Skype. So we both do coaching as well. So we kind of have a mixture of clients.
Yeah. And we do some things, you know, face to face. Typically when we do disclosures, we want to do those face to face, but we have some different programs and mm-hmm. some different kind of packages that couples can explore to kind of figure out where they're at and what they really need mm-hmm. and how we can kind of walk alongside and support them.
Okay. Now I've got a question. I don't know if you were listening to the show before you came on, but I literally do have a woman whose husband absolutely positively refuses to do a disclosure, and mm-hmm. they were separated, they're back together, and she feels like he is deathly afraid that there's so much more that he hasn't shared that she'll walk out again. What would you advise a couple going through this?
Yeah, that's really, really hard, a hard space, you know, especially for her. Until you have that foundation of honesty, it's really hard to do much relationally. And so we found with the couples we've worked with, before that disclosure happened, you know, you almost feel like that relationship is in a stalemate a little bit. And so it's been imperative for them to have that individual support when we've had those couples, and for him to have really healthy recovery support around him that are encouraging him, you know, about why disclosure is good, why it's positive. I think a lot of times there's a lot of fear built up for the addict around, you know, either shame or what will happen if I do disclose, that isn't really founded in truth. And so I think having healthy recovery people in his life able to kind of speak into that, but it really, you know, it can't be the partner usually because there's not that kind of relational capital present.
You know, and one of the things that I do when I work with addicts and I work with, you know, folks who've betrayed, is we talk about what are the goals? What are we ultimately after? Because a lot of times, you know, addicts are very aware that their relationship, their marriage isn't where they want it to be. And so one of the first things we do is we sit down and say, what is the dream? What is the vision? What are you after? And then we talk, you know, as we craft that vision, as we craft that dream, we talk really honestly about, is that dream possible? if you're hiding. And we really kind of explore that, and we explore why they may be hiding or why they don't want to do disclosure. We want to deal with that. We want to talk about the emotions around that. Mm-hmm. We also want to talk about maybe experiences where they've been honest in the past, and that's hurt them. There are oftentimes in people's stories that they have been honest, or they have shared, or someone has found out, and things have gone really badly for them. That's created a lot of pain, and so they're not just dealing with their marriage or with that relationship, but relationships past. And so how to repair those wounds so that they can feel confident. But we also talk about, and I'm really upfront and honest with addicts to say, relationships are a risk. Mm-hmm. And being honest is a vulnerable and a risky place to go, but it's the only route to intimacy.
Yeah.
And if intimacy, if connection, if safety, if that really, really deep partnership is your goal, honesty is the only road that will get you there.
So a lot of the benefit, you know, because we work with a lot of couples together, is that we have a consistent message we're telling the addict and the partner. And I think a lot of psychoeducation around trauma and trauma triggers is so important, you know, for them to both understand. A lot of times without that disclosure, the partner is in this kind of constant state of hyper arousal. She knows she's not safe. She doesn't have the full truth. And so those trauma triggers will continue, can get worse, you know, and to alleviate a lot of that, a disclosure can help. That's one step towards kind of healing that. And I think a lot of times the addict says, you know, sees those triggers and says, well, I don't want more of that. So there's no way I would share everything, because I've seen what happens when I share the little bit. But realizing, well, wait, no, it's because of the process. It's because the way the traumatized brain works that's happening. And we can actually start to alleviate some of that by being honest. And so I think some of that psychoeducation can be helpful too.
And we also are comfortable sharing our journey with people. And we really believe that part of what's necessary in these spaces is testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And so we rely on our testimony and the testimony of other couples we've worked with who say, this is a very difficult journey, but it has been worth everything, every piece and every part of it, every step we've taken. And so I think that's a huge thing for couples and for individuals to see what hope looks like. You know, I love the 12 steps. We share our experience, strength, but we also share our hope. You know, we share what God has done with our journey, and it's about sharing those promises. I always love hearing the promises, because it's like, I remember when I was sitting in a 12-step meeting and someone read a promise and it had happened in my life. And I was like, oh my God, you know, situations that used to baffle me no longer baffle me. And what a gift that is, you know, what a gift it is to know peace. And so we talk about that with the couples, about what the vision is and how that vision is not something far off, but is closer than they realize.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that. And so I'm going to ask you, obviously, one of the gifts about the two of you is that you are a couple that has been through it and has made it over to the other side, and you're giving back. And so you're an excellent role model, and you are a beacon of hope. And that's what I say as an APSATS coach and therapist. We've got to give them hope, because this is the hardest thing they probably will ever go through. I can only think of maybe the death of a child as being equally as traumatic. So let me ask you, what do you think has been the most surprising part of your journey?
I think the way that, you know, God, our higher power, has brought about things that we never imagined. I can remember telling Joanna about a year or 2 years into our recovery, we're not going to be that couple that works with other couples going through addiction. I was like, I won't do it. And somehow, some way, you know, God just kept opening doors and showing us possibilities. And it has been amazing. And it has helped us heal even more working with those couples. And one story in particular. So Joanna told you about the pastor that came to her class and told his story.
Mm-hmm.
6 years later, we had moved to a different city, and I had been invited to go to a breakfast of men in recovery, leaders in the community who wanted to put together a recovery event. And while I was there, I was asked to share my testimony. And I shared my story. I shared about how this man had come to my wife's class, had told his story, and his story had led to our healing. And now I was telling my story, and that was helping other men heal. And after I shared my story, a man at the end of the table leaned over and said, I was that pastor. I was that man. I was in your wife's class 6 years ago. I told my story. That is my story. He's now the pastor of our church. He has hired us to work in his community where we do recovery, where we work with marriages, and it has been an amazing blessing for us to see really full circle the power of hope played out among multiple generations.
And I think it brings so much meaning and purpose to our journey beyond us, beyond our relationship, that now other people are finding healing through the work that we did. It's just incredible to see.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, what a small world. And you know, that is one of those things. I mean, God lets you know in all sorts of ways that he's working with you, through you, because of you. I mean, it's just an amazing story that you share. Okay, guys, I'm going to ask you a couple more questions. I want to know, what has helped you stay committed, positive and hopeful throughout your marriage? Because, I mean, I'm going to ask you, Joanna, tell me, how long do you think it took you to get through the trauma phase of the discovery?
It definitely, was a while. And we had starts and stops along the way. You know, it wasn't a perfect journey for us. We kind of dove in head first. And for me, I really struggled to find good resources. When it first happened, I didn't know anything about the trauma model or even really trauma in general. A lot of the resources I tried were kind of codependent, co-addict focused. And I knew I didn't fit with that. And so it was really isolating at first. And so somehow through some internet search, I discovered the trauma model, and I said, yes, that's it. That's what I'm going through. And there was no groups locally, so I ended up starting my own group in the city where we were. And so that was huge. I think just figuring out, just having that insight into what I was going through was huge. But probably at least a year of really intense recovery work individually and as a couple. So we were thankfully in a place where we had a lot of extra margin space in our life to really, focus on recovery, which I think helped us kind of get through that process really quickly. And I think one of the other things that really helped us stay positive, committed, and hopeful was some of the work that we had done even before that point in our marriage. I think we had learned some tools to help us transform really other destructive dynamics that were there, that were present. And we just saw 180-degree change in those things. So I think that work really helped us stay hopeful that we could do that again. We had seen the change. We had seen hope. We had seen those destructive cycles, really turn into something that brought us closer together. And so it took a lot longer. it took a lot more work in this case. But I think we also knew that we were worth fighting for. I think we both really appreciated the other as a teammate. We knew that this is a person I want to be with. And so it's worth doing whatever work we have to do to get to that place of health.
Yeah.
Okay, Matthew, what do you think?
Yeah.
How do you stay committed and positive and hopeful?
Yeah. I have a great teammate. I've never felt like Joanna was against me, even in the midst of the chaos, the hell that my lies took her through and took us through. And I really, I put our great relationship at risk with my behavior, and I have had to do the work of kind of restoring, but I've always felt like Joanna was on my side in that she wanted me to succeed. She wanted me to be able to do that and to do that well for our family. And so I think that's huge, and that's never waned. She's always stayed a great teammate. And I think as well for us, on this second kind of part, as we've gotten out of crisis, community has been such an important part for us and couple community. We actually, you may see a common theme running around, but we can't find what we want till we go and start it. We really wanted to do some recovery work with couples, and we hadn't really found other recovery couples to meet with, and nobody really likes to have dinner and talk about sex addiction. And so,
as a couple.
So we recruited two couples who were in leadership, who we had built a relationship with slowly, to say, we want to do a couples group. We want to be intentional about maintaining the growth of our marriages, maintaining the growth of our recovery. We don't want to stay stagnant. And so they joined us about a year and a half ago. And that was so important, and I think gave us such more hope for the future that we're not alone. And there are other couples that are experiencing the blessing of what we would call marriage 2.0, you know, this different marriage, this different relationship that we really had always been dreaming of. So I think that's been really important as well.
And I think a lot of just the work we do, and we found that sharing our story, sharing our hope with others, and kind of passing that on, I mean, that for me helps me stay committed, helps me stay positive. You know, it's a constant reminder every time we get to share our story, like even like now, you know, it reminds us of where we're at, the growth that we've had as a couple. You know, we are at a place, we have built intimacy that we never would have had if we did not go through this. And just so thankful and grateful for that.
Yeah. And I'm constantly reminded that my worst day in recovery is always better than my best day acting out, my best day in my addiction. And so I think like that's never left me, you know, like I know that my life now is so much better free of that addiction. And so I don't have a desire to go back. I don't have a desire to lose commitment, because I don't wish for that life. Because I know what's on the other side, and that makes it easy to stay committed to hard work. And it is work. It is an effort, but it's always worth the effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, you guys, thank you so much for sharing your story today. And you do give us all hope. And I heard you singing Joanna's praise, and I appreciate that, because it really shows that you are empathetic and you understand her and you're willing to do what it takes to make it right for her. One more time, your website is
www.renovatelove.com. www.renovatelove.com. They can find us there. We're located in San Diego, so if anybody ever wants to come visit us, it's always a great place to be. But if not, they can find us online and work with us from anywhere.
Yep.
Hey, and thank you for our gifts. I'm going to pull that up right now. And I'm going to
thank
share
you so
that
much
with our APSED training. Yes, absolutely, guys. You are amazing. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so
Carol.
Much. Appreciate it.
All right. Make it a good one, and talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Well, as you can see, there are couples that make it. You know, sometimes I'll talk to somebody and he or she will say, do you got any couples that you could refer us to so that we can actually hear their hope, strength, and recovery? And I will definitely be referring them to this couple, and certainly to listening to this show. And, you know, that is what APSATS is all about. We've had plenty of couples on that have talked about their journey, their suffering, their transformation, and the fact that I promise you, when in good recovery, sex addicts make the best husbands ever. That's my promise. If they're in good recovery. All right, we will talk to you next week. You heard me say, Dan Drake and Janice Caudill they're going to be on, and they're going to be talking about their book, Disclosures. We can't wait to hear that. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times. So fearlessly have the courage to be yourself, and don't hesitate to email me if you have a question you'd like us to answer on the air. That's at carol@carolthecoach.com. Make it a good one, and I'll see you next week. And I mean that.
For more information, go to abseth.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.